Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 29, 2020. My new article on LinkedIn: the latest scheme to divide Israel, cantonize it. The latest whim among those who want to see Israel disintegrated is to split it into cantons. It makes perfect sense, they exclaim, we will be like Switzerland. And why not? Those who want a liberal lifestyle will live in the Tel Aviv canton, those who want an orthodox lifestyle will live in the Benny Brak canton, and so on and so forth. Everyone will have their way and we will all be happy. The divisions between us will not vanish, we will never agree. But they must not deter us from striving for unity despite them. If we strive for unity as a value in itself, a worthy goal we must achieve, even if only so as to serve as an example, we will find that our rejection of each other is but the reason and the impetus to form unity and solidarity. Without the hate, we'd have no need to build love. Without rejection, we'd have no need to forge connections. And without connection, we are not a nation. If we do that, we might as well pack up and leave now. We didn't come to Israel to live in separate tribes. We came here to reunite the Jewish people. We can't expect 2,000 years of exile not to leave its marks on all of us, but if we don't want to revive our common identity, we might as well leave now because it defies the purpose of our coming here, and the meaning of being Jewish. Jews have never been similar to one another. Our forefathers were outcasts from various tribes, and believed that only when we rise above our differences we can achieve true unity. King Solomon called this motto, "Love will cover all crimes," Prof. 12:10, and Rashi explained that Rabbi Akiva's motto, "Love your neighbor as yourself," is the great rule of the Torah. In other words, we weren't meant to let our separateness remain, but to rise above it and unite. The whole world consists of separate nations that have no idea how to unite. They fight each other to death. They've been through two world wars, they are well on their way to another one, and no one knows how to prevent it. The only way this can be stopped is if people find a way to unite above their inherent and immutable differences. We, the Jews, were the only ones who ever attempted it, when we first formed the nation, and the only ones who succeeded, albeit for very short periods and with countless clashes in between. Nevertheless, that successful attempt, or perhaps better defined as effort, has earned us the mission to be a light unto nations, to show the way to forge unity among different and hostile peoples. Subconsciously, this is why the nations voted in favor of establishing a Jewish state in the land of Israel in 1947. The Holocaust was certainly an impetus, but we shouldn't be so naive as to believe that countries that wouldn't let in pleading Jewish refugees before and during World War II had suddenly become philo-Semites when it ended. Despite its innate dislike of Jews, the world has given us, a sovereign state, a chance to re-establish our nationhood. And since our forefathers were aliens who united, when we are not united, we are aliens. If we embrace our alienation and divide the country into cantons, we will admit that we are unable to connect. The nations will feel that we had given up on the effort to unite and set the example of unity above hate they so desperately need, and that will be the end of the state of Israel. The divisions between us will not vanish, we will never agree. But they must not deter us from striving for unity despite them. If we strive for unity as a value in itself, a worthy goal we must achieve, even if only so as to serve as an example, we will find that our rejection of each other is but the reason and the impetus to form unity and solidarity. Without the hate, we'd have no need to build love. Without rejection, we'd have no need to forge connections. And without connection, we are not a nation. Michael Leitman, on Quora. Why did anti-Semitism switch sides politically in the U.S.? In the U.S., anti-Semitism was commonly considered as emanating from the far right, yet today, it is tilted more to the left. However, The phenomenon of anti-Semitism itself is beyond political affiliation, and in the future, I expect both sides to unify around their common hatred of Jews. Today, American Jews are a lot more aware about the rise of anti-Semitism in the US. However, the thought of an impending Holocaust is still mostly elusive. They still do not see that anti-Semitism could reach such levels where it can all overturn on them very severely. Indeed, leading up to the Holocaust in Europe, most Jews also disagreed that it could happen, denouncing and mocking those who, in advance of the Holocaust, warned of Jewish genocide. The past decade served to normalize anti-Semitism in the US as well as in other parts of the world, with regular accounts of anti-Semitic vandalism, distribution of anti-Semitic flyers and posters, anti-Semitism entering various musicians' songs and social media posts as well as artists' artworks, anti-Semitic attractions at carnivals, as well as an increasing amount of people questioning the Holocaust's occurrence and not knowing about the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust. In addition, last year, 2019, marked the previous decade's yearly peak in the amount of anti-Semitic incidents in the US. If last decade represented anti-Semitism increasingly seeping into the mainstream, then I expect anti-Semitism to become an all-out trend this decade. At the moment, both political sides still use the mainstream condemnation of anti-Semitism as a tool to blame each other for the rise of anti-Semitism in the US. But the more their conflict intensifies together with more acceptance of the idea that Jews stand behind their polarization, then they could indeed reach a point of agreement to unite against the Jews. This is also why American Jews can expect to see dropping support from the government, because if they can be scapegoated as the cause of the country's problems, then it serves to shift half of the American population's negative focus away from the government and onto the Jews. In such a state, since the Jews are vastly outnumbered in America, the idea of their ostracization would also become increasingly popular, until one morning it could very well become the reality of the day. History is rich with examples of leaders who capitalized on growing anti-Semitic sentiment in the public at times of various crises to direct the public's negativity onto the Jews. Also, while the horrid past experience of the Holocaust spurs many Jews today to combat anti-Semitism in many different ways like no other time in history, we can already clearly see how the increased efforts to counter anti-Semitism fall short of stopping the forceful anti-Semitic tide, which rapidly outpaces the numerous efforts to fight it. In short, we need to see that a grave disaster lies ahead for American Jews. However, we also need to see that it can be stopped and even inverted into a positive, supportive and even loving attitude toward Jews, on one condition. What is that condition? It is that a dramatic shift in attitude toward Jews should be sought in no place other than the unification of the Jewish people. In other words, the disaster is laid out on a path that we walk without making any strides to change to a different and more unifying path. If we unite above our differences and divisions, then we will be a conduit for unity to spread to others. Then, when the public feels the increased happiness and other benefits that stem from Jewish unity, they will herald the Jews as those who initiated the process. If we fail to take any step toward our unification, then hatred will continue rising against us, and we can experience that hatred to erupt in a terrible way. My new article on LinkedIn, Is It Too Late for American Jewry? American Jews used to think that anti-Semitism in America existed only on the fringes of the right. But currently, you find more of it in the mainstream left. In all likelihood, however, the left and the right will unite around the one thing they have in common, hatred for Jews. American Jews are waking up, but by the time they realize that they are reliving the pre-Holocaust days, it just might be too late. A recent AJC survey highlighted 2 points indicating that Jews are finally waking up from the illusion of safety. 1. More than 93% of Democrats, 87% of independents, and 75% of Republicans say anti-Semitism infects the nation, At least 80% of Jews of all denominations point to the uptick, as do at least 86% of Jews of all ages. 231% of American Jews say they have tucked their Star of David pendant into their blouse, removed their kippot, yarmulke, and avoided publicly wearing, carrying, or displaying other things that might help people identify them, sick, as Jewish. Additionally, a quarter of respondents say they avoid certain places, events, or situations out of concern for their safety. Antisemitism has been creeping from the fringes to the mainstream in America for several years, but the pace has picked up in the last year or two, and I anticipate that after the election it will become in vogue to hate Jews. When that happens, progressives and liberals from the left will suddenly find common ground with neo-Nazis from the right, and everyone will agree that they do not need to fight among them since the Jews are the source of all their troubles. Jews are the ones setting them apart, and from here on they'll know what to do. If the Jews expect the government, any government, to protect them, they've got another thing coming. There is no political sense in supporting Jews. If they restrain anti-Semitism, then the half of the nation that's lost the election will turn against the government. But if they can pin the nation's troubles on the Jews, then what better way is there to unite the nation? This is the exact same ploy that Hitler and numerous rulers before him used in order to unite the nation and divert criticism from the government to a vulnerable minority that everyone hates and envies anyway. The Jews, once more, will become expendable. Unlike Germany in the 1930s, American Jews, remembering the Holocaust, are very active in resisting anti-Semitism. They protest, establish defense organizations, and lobby on Capitol Hill. But none of it will help. American Jewry has come to symbolize capitalism in its worst form, where money is all that matters, and when you've got it, you make the world go round. As long as this is the image of Jews in America, they don't stand a chance against anti-Semitism. Jews should engage in one thing and one thing only, connecting with each other. They have to connect among themselves in order to be an example for the rest of the world. Jews have given the world the most important motto of all, the epitome of altruism, love your neighbor as yourself. But if they don't exercise it, or even try to move in that direction, the world has no need for them and it will opt to carry on without them. I have been warning American Jews for nearly two decades that their fate would be horrible unless they united and became an example of solidarity. I have written two books about the consequences of disunity and its essential role to the people of Israel, like a bundle of reeds, Why Unity and Mutual Guarantee Are Today's Call of the Hour, and The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, Historical Facts on Anti-Semitism. I published hundreds of articles and essays, and given dozens of lectures, live and through the internet, throughout the US, and Canada. Despite all the historical evidence I had presented, and despite all the quotes where I had shown that our sages throughout the centuries cautioned that unity is our only hope, hardly anyone listened, much less embraced unity as a solution to our problems. Now, finally, American Jews accept that there is anti-Semitism, but they still refuse to believe that they have a solution to it. They think that anti-Semites can choose not to hate Jews, and don't realize that it's their hatred of each other that excites the world's hatred of them. By the time they realize that all they need is not to hate each other, the world might be too engrossed in accusing Jews, too excited about the discovery of the cause of its troubles. I pray that I am wrong, though history, I'm afraid, is on my side. My new article on LinkedIn: Jews can be the key to American unity. Could anyone imagine the day would come when Jews in America would need to hide their religion and cultural background? In America, the land of freedom and endless opportunities, the melting pot where people from all walks of life could converge and coexist in mutual respect, as the founding fathers conceived it. How can we now come to terms with the fact that 24% of American Jews say they avoid wearing a Star of David pendant, kippah, and any other Jewish symbol in public out of concern for their safety. This is the disturbing reality revealed by the most recent survey on attitudes of American Jews about anti-Semitism. Food for serious thought. Deep anxiety among us, Jews, and lack of awareness among the general public about the severity of anti-Semitism in the U.S., is revealed in this year's report conducted by the American Jewish Committee. The survey's release coincides with the second anniversary of the Tree of Life synagogue shooting. The still bleeding wounds of hatred against Jews are evident in the ongoing attacks on college campuses and hate crimes committed across the country. In fact, nearly 9 out of 10 respondents believe that the cancer of anti-Semitism is a worrying problem in the U.S. Would trying to avoid being identified as Jewish help us escape from being the target of anti-Semites? No, because the number of haters is bound to multiply. Divisiveness, clashes, and increasing hostility within American society are the breeding ground of a deep crisis at all levels. America is a very dynamic nation. The effects of the pandemic have damaged and destabilized the economy. Public health and social instability are only some of the concerns afflicting the American public. The mass media in the U.S. is powerful and very influential in heating up the environment. All these elements combine to create an unstable situation in which people's nerves are so frayed and circumstances so volatile that any issue could ignite the powder keg in the blink of an eye. In such uncertain conditions, it is entirely feasible that we will see in the near future unanimous agreement in the entire American population that Jews are to blame for the severe blows the nation may suffer in both the political arena and in the socioeconomic spectrum. Current trends indicate that street protests and pogroms may not be a rare occurrence. It seems less and less far-fetched that a new Holocaust is looming on the horizon. I say this in all seriousness. Certainly, some may be in a state of denial, just as it was in Germany when the majority of Jews refused to believe the final solution was imminent. How could another Holocaust be possible? History has taught us the hard way that when things go wrong in society, sooner rather than later, Jews will be blamed and persecuted. However, before the situation comes to this, Jews have the ability and opportunity to apply a special preventive treatment, to rise above all differences and unite. And this must take place regardless of any political preference or other consideration. Instead of allowing politics to divide us, we must come together in solidarity and cohesion. As it is written in the book Mor Vashemesh, the prime defense against calamity is love and unity. When there are love, unity, and friendship within Israel, no calamity can come upon them. American Jews from all sides of the political scene have become so alienated from one another that each faction feels that the other behaves against the interests of the Jewish people and against our core values. Ironically, the greatest of Jewish values is unity above differences. It is famously stated as the greatest law of Torah, love thy neighbor as thyself. The inability of Jews to rise above differences of opinion plainly shows how distanced we have become from our true heritage. This colossal lapse must be mended quickly, not only because it is our true goal as a people, but because our error in oversight puts us in grave and immediate danger. We may have different political opinions, but we are all Jews, and for anti-Semites, that is enough. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains that it is the historical purpose of Jews to demonstrate unity and to model corrected societal relations for others. We became a nation at the foot of Mount Sinai only after every person present accepted the condition of being as one man with one heart. Jews practiced the method that allowed them to rise above their differences and lived under principles of true equality and mutual concern. But then unfounded hatred and disunity arose, causing the destruction of the first and second temples. Since then, we have forgotten that unless we are in brotherly love and unity, afflictions will continue to fall upon us, until we remember and carry out our mission. Today, as anti-Semitism increases yet again, Jews must finally provide the model of social cohesion that only we can. Our ancient calling has become so pressing and relevant in these precarious times that ignoring it will have horrendous consequences. The threats towards Jews signal an imperative change that needs to happen, a change that Jews must initiate and play the decisive role in it. We must see that our true Jewish power, both to protect our communities and to contribute to the world, lies in our ability to unite above all differences, and that the wisdom of how to do this is more than a simple mechanism for fending off threats and safeguarding our people. It is deeply ingrained in our core values and heritage. The future of the world depends on women. We are born in this world, the worst of all worlds. Nothing is worse than it. Therefore, you can calm down, it will not be worse anywhere else than here. All other states are much better than this. And so, it is worth thinking about how to get out of the sensation of this world. To do this, you don't need to die, you just need to change the sensation. Sometimes a state of despair suddenly gives way to happiness and joy. Let's try to rise to a better state. The Creator wants us to rejoice so that through connection we would reach the world of absolute good, the upper world full of light, where there is not even a memory of evil left. We should try to establish this spirit in the group. Otherwise, the Creator will not come close to us. He comes only where they try to establish joy and happiness in the group and a good attitude toward each other. The world is entering difficult times. It gradually is descending lower and lower, into bigger problems and conflicts between everyone. But despite this, we must try to establish a connection between us, around the globe. This will protect us, give us confidence and joy and increase our immunity against the coronavirus and all other diseases. Not a single bug will be able to approach us, because everything depends on our relationship. If there is a kleeper between us, a selfish desire, then viruses will get there. And if there is a place for sanctity between us, a good attitude toward each other, then not a single harmful virus can get there. This is against the law of nature. If there are good relations between women in the group, it will affect the whole world because a woman is the foundation of the world. For the sake of a good future, for the sake of your family, for the sake of your children, try to treat each other well. Be the way you teach your children when you persuade them not to quarrel, not to fight, but to play together. This will affect everyone, and men depend on you too. We want every heart to feel everyone else like they feel themselves. Let everyone enter my heart, it can contain the whole world. And then, I will feel that I live in the world of infinity. The world is facing a difficult period. The Creator wants to push us toward the goal, and He pushes us harder and harder. It seems to us that everything happens around us, but in fact, it is all inside us. Let's try to keep the connection between us as strong as possible, and this will certainly help us move quickly and easily to the goal. All the evil and the good that will be revealed to us, we can use for proper advancement. From the Lesson for Women, October 24, 2020. A new perspective on the horizon. The world is entering a new stage of the coronavirus epidemic. People are gradually beginning to realize that the virus and all the associated restrictions will remain with us for a long time, and gradually are changing us. We are starting to get tired and to despair because there is nowhere to strive to, nowhere to run to. There is no opportunity to earn and compete like before. All of life seems to have fallen asleep, which has led to a feeling of general fatigue and discontent. In some strata of society, this manifests itself in an explosion of indignation, in others in a silent depression. Some destroy and plunder, some go to demonstrations, and the unrest threatens to escalate into civil wars, as it has happened in history. If people do not have a clear perspective for the future and a goal for which it is worth living, they begin to degrade, not knowing what to do with themselves. The absence of a future takes away all strength from a person because he has nowhere to strive to, nothing to do. Therefore, in all countries, people will begin to feel themselves without strength, without purpose, without any interest in life, in a state of apathy, from which it is impossible to get out. But maybe there is a way that the Creator wants to show people. Life has not been too purposeful before. We just made up goals for ourselves, like in a child's game, if only there were something to play. But now, when the Creator has taken this game from us, and does not allow us to continue like we did before, can we understand where we actually ended up? What kind of life was it? A useless race from morning to night to earn and spend everything, and earn and spend again. We were spinning like a hamster on a wheel. Perhaps, from hopelessness, a person will agree to change the principle, and if there is no strength to take care of himself, he will begin to care for others. Then others will take care of him, and we will receive the right fulfillment from life. The main thing is that I have strength, a reason to move and do something. We will begin to live for a common goal, support each other, and then the future will shine upon us, and give everyone strength. There will be something to live for. Moreover, we will gain an eternal goal, not such a fleeting one as we have today. We will reveal the perfect form of nature, a higher power, and will be able to control our lives. This will be real life, and not a game as it was before. We are facing a difficult winter and very serious states that can explain a lot to us, if we are sensitive and try to understand the Creator's intentions, what He wants. Try to feel where the Creator leads all of humanity, how we can understand His play with us, with the desire to enjoy that was created by Him. According to what the Creator awakens in people, it will become easier for us to assimilate new concepts in our life, in nature, and to come closer and closer to the Creator. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 25, 2020, Writings of Balha Sulam, The Study of the Ten Sefirot. When we will get second wind. The main reason for the unrest is not that people are left without jobs and without means for living, but that they lost their future. This despair is spreading like an epidemic from family to family, from city to city, from country to country. A sense of hopelessness, apathy, and loss of perspective for the future has already engulfed the entire globe, covering it from all sides. It is as if an engine has stopped because there is no need to spin. Businesses are closing. No one except us understands what is happening and how to deal with it. People should understand that it is impossible to work for their own fulfillment anymore. It is a deception because it does not provide fulfillment. Fulfillment disappears and I become disappointed in this work. But here we find a new method of fulfilling ourselves from fulfilling others, and we get a second wind. We simply all together reconfigure ourselves and receive real infinite and limitless pleasure from being able to take care of each other. The purpose of creation is to give us pleasure, a true one, not temporary and disappearing. We are now at this transition. It is difficult to say how long it will last, but apparently, it will last for an extended period of time, which humanity needs to understand this change and to implement it. Today we live for the sake of fulfilling ourselves, and tomorrow we will live for the sake of fulfilling our friends and the Ten. I will be devoted to the Ten because only through it can I fulfill the Creator and humanity. Such internal transformation takes time. Yet, it all depends on us. Maybe we can change that quickly. Look at the huge changes in human nature and its thoughts that the pandemic has made in a matter of months. I did not think it could happen so quickly. Day by day there are changes in different places of the world as if waves are rolling across the ocean, rising in one place, then in another. The upper light affects the entire depth of the desire of creation and changes it from the highest layers to the lowest ones, including the klipot and desires that are not yet ripe for clarification and correction. The process is very complex. However, the common despair and apathy and the unbearable feeling of emptiness that leads to an explosion show that the Creator is leading us to very serious steps. The feeling of emptiness is the worst. A person is ready to do anything, even die, just not to feel empty. This is the structure of desire, kli. The Creator cannot do anything if we do not ask. The upper light is constantly approaching us, like a meteorite approaching the earth from the depths of the universe. It may take years for it to reach us, and enter the layers of the atmosphere. However, already today scientists can say that in 20 years it will fall to earth. For 20 years it will be approaching us, but what can we do? This is how we need to understand that the Creator, the upper light, is approaching and wants to be revealed. He will be revealed either in the opposite form, since he is opposite to the will to receive, and therefore will be accompanied by problems and troubles. Or he can be revealed according to the similarity of qualities, and then we will meet him face to face and adhere to him according to the goodwill of the receiver and the giver. It all depends on us, whether we can establish the correct connection between the vast desire of humanity and the Creator each time. We are responsible for this contact, and I hope we will be ready to do our work correctly. Otherwise, the contradiction between the Creator and the will to receive will become so great that it will lead to very serious consequences. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 25, 2020, Writings of Balha Sulam, Study of the Ten Sefirot. New Life 1283. The Tenant-Landlord Dilemma.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yaela Shadael. Hello. And today, we would like to introduce a situation from our day-to-day life, and we'd like to learn how to look at it from an integral perspective. Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, the story we'd like to present today is the story of a landlord. A man and a woman, they have a family that are renting out an apartment that they have to another family. The dilemma that they have to deal with is that we're in a difficult financial situation in general. Those that are renting the apartment from them found themselves in a tight financial spot. One of them is on furlough now, the general salary decreased, and they're asking for a serious reduction in the rent. And so the landlords, they have to decide, should they give them the discount, a serious discount on the rent or not? The husband says, the landlord, he says that right now he prefers to bring in other tenants. There are still people that are willing to rent the house. They themselves are in a non-simple financial situation. His wife is also on furlough leave, and the financial situation isn't getting any better. He doesn't want to endanger his family. He wants to build a solid financial basis and to promise their income for the future too. The rent is a part of the family's income. The wife says, look, they're renting this house from us for many years. They paid every month. They're very nice people. I can't throw them out. I can't tell them, just go. Even though that we're in a difficult situation too, we have to find some kind of compromise. And really the dilemma that we'd like to talk about today is, A, how do you relate to this entire situation? How do you correctly approach a problem that really consists of, these are serious existential questions. This is the landlord's income. On the other hand, the financial situation of the family that's renting the home and so on. So before we go deeper in, first of all, we'd like to understand, how do you see this situation that we're trying to look at from a systemic, integral point of view? Well, of course, here nature wants to put us into a general kind of calculation, human calculation, where we take each other into account, into consideration, through problems and troubles, or problems and troubles force us to connect and to feel each other's sorrow, that all in all, we're all living in one integral system. And so, on part of nature, what's preferable is for us to take each other into consideration, and in these difficult situations, to reach a willingness to help each other survive. So the first thing you're saying is that we have an opportunity here. We have the opportunity to solve a problem that actually touches both sides. But there is the ability to find a common solution. And if to try and understand what you're saying, to drive them out or to ask them to leave is a solution that is incorrect right now. I think it's incorrect. And what does the integral approach say? What principles can you give us here in order to approach such a problem and look at it integrally correctly? The approach says that if all of us, all in all, our income decreases by 30%, for example, then accordingly we have to take the burden into consideration, everyone's burden accordingly. If it's a worker, if it's a tenant, if it's a landlord, whoever, wherever there is a general reduction, we have to behave accordingly. I can't say, but you see that here it says that you have to pay such and such an amount and continue paying the same. It's impossible. Why? You signed the contract. Obviously, we signed the contract, and on paper, maybe it's just and everything. But I don't think that anyone can say that people will say that I'm wrong, because the conditions are such that no one could predict. No one knew that this will happen, neither them nor I, the landlord or the tenant. Directly, in a good and nice way, on their part, their intention was to pay all the time, and they paid as many years as they lived, for as many years as they lived there. They paid regularly, so what can you do? I can't now ask them to leave. Suppose someone that will come to me, he'll also pay the same price as before? Or will he pay less according to how the market is now? Most people are getting a lower income now, are in difficult financial situations, and therefore, to me too, for me, I also shouldn't get rid of such tenants that are, you know, they're trying to do their best. But here we're talking about business, not about integrity. You have an asset that gives you an income, suppose 5,000 shekels a month. It was part of your income. Maybe you too support your children that are renting an apartment from someone else. You got used to getting 5,000 shekels every month. Your tenant is in a tight spot right now. Okay, you can look at it and say, I'll check the market. If I can find another tenant that will bring me these 5,000 shekels, I'll say these tenants' friends, I'm very sorry, but I need money. I'm not a welfare institution after all. The question is, okay, you're willing to wait for a month or two, but how long? And should I look at things this way as the landlord? Nonetheless, I'd look at the general trend of the market and seriously consider, should I get rid of them or not? Because actually, to change tenants, it's not easy. On the way, you also lose money a month or two till you find someone and so on. Also, maybe I'll have to repair the apartment, do repairs. And who knows what's going to happen on the way. Ahead, I don't see that we'll get more money or anything. But maybe to the contrary. I think the question is, the relationship between a landlord and a tenant, it's clear, strictly financial, or is there something else to it too? Can't be strictly financial, because we're all in a deterioration, and this affects everyone. Of course, there's also the financial state here, but I have to look at these tenants. Suppose I'll take new tenants. Will they be more loyal than those that I have now? That if something happens to them tomorrow too, suppose one of them, the husband or wife or both of them, go on furlough leave. Then what? How much can I play around with it? Maybe eventually you don't really get anything good as a result. I think that this is the consideration that the husband has. He says that as long as I can maximize the profit from my asset, I'll do it. Once I won't be able to do it anymore, then I'll stop and see what should I do in the new situation. Still, I would wait. I feel that beyond the financial thing here, you're very cautious about the social aspect. Can you explain about this? Because we're experiencing a general blow that comes to all of society as one family. And we have to take each other into consideration. And we have no choice. We're all now getting a lesser ability to survive, to make a living. And if I see that these tenants, they're honest and they're trying, and I have experience in our relationship, I wouldn't be that hasty about changing them. In the building that I live in, about 2 weeks ago, an elderly couple, were evicted. I saw they brought out everything. They were evicted, in short. There, the landlord reached a different decision. I don't know for how long they didn't pay him, but he decided that that's it. It's like he's paying money from his own pocket. Now, many times people say, I'm not Social Security. I'm not the government. If there is a general social problem, you started saying that nature, by general collective problems, wants to bring us to a state where we will be more considerate of each other. I understand this in general, and there has to be more mutual guarantee, but I'm not the government. I'm not Social Security. I can't support someone who got a financial blow. I have one wallet. I have outgo. I have spendings. And if suddenly my income is shot, it's black and white. That's it. But I see that you have a broader view. I think that all of us can participate in this general direction because we caused nature to be in this kind of deterioration where we have no wind left in our sails. We have to understand this together and to start inflating our wheels again. And each of us, not all of us together, not each of us on his own, but all of us together, we start having. You're saying that each of us is responsible for the situation that we're in, and we're all a part of the solution. This is one thing. Another thing is that the solution will come only as a result of all of us being a part of building this new state. True. How am I participating in this blow that society is now going through? Am I participating in this or not? It's true that I feel it in different calculations of mine and everywhere, but still, what do I want to mitigate this tendency with? By taking other people into consideration. And what will that give me? It will give me a good feeling that I'm participating, that it's like at times of war. I don't run away, but I join the army. How much are you willing to pay for this kind of feeling, in shekels or dollars? I don't know. It depends on the general reduction of income that the nation is experiencing. Suppose the nation, due to this blow, lost 20 or 30% of its ability to function. So I have to take, nonetheless, into consideration those, preferably those 20 or 30%. I have to participate in that. So I should suppose take off 30% of those tenants' rent. And so should everyone. So should everyone. I'm not saying only myself, but I'm not waiting for everyone. I want to be as a soldier on the battlefield. This is how I adjust myself to these war conditions that nature has brought upon me. There is a certain principle here. What is it? That I see in what's happening, also my fault, and here I'm with the nation because I'm a part of the nation. And this is how we advance to a better state. You're talking about a very good person. No, a person doesn't necessarily have to be good. He simply could be smarter, more calculated, a person who understands that we have no choice, that here we're at war, that we're really at war. Let's say that both sides want to solve this integrally. Both sides want to somehow resolve this, find a compromise, a good, correct one in terms of the integral point of view of things. What's the solution, in your opinion? What should everyone contribute for the sake of the solution? I think that here we should try and head toward one another. The tenant and the landlord, and to agree somewhere halfway to reduce the rent. And also to write some kind of document about that and to accept it from this moment and on until things will improve. I'm trying to understand, what is the responsibility of the landlord in relation to his own family, and what is the responsibility toward the others, toward the tenant and his family? One way or another, we're in one pot. We're all interdependent. And that I allow my tenant to pay less, I make things easier for him. It's my good and nice participation in the general situation going on in the country. And I think that eventually it'll come back to me, even egoistically wise. I'm not even talking spiritually wise. Okay. We're with you. Suppose let's take a situation where the landlord also finds himself in financial difficulties, and he did what he could. He gave a certain discount to the family that's renting this apartment from him. How low should he go? Should he also go into debt for their sake? Is that correct, the right thing to do? This is already a different problem. Meaning, it's not that he's losing from the profit, but that he's really losing from the loss. This is already a different question. So here we have to consider the measure to which all those that demand their landlords to also participate, what will happen with that? Meaning, will the landlord have not only to reduce his own assets where that he's not getting what he used to get from his tenant, but he'll have to compensate for what for the money that the tenant used to pay him. Now he has to complete this from his own pocket. These are different calculations, but one way or another, we have to understand that this period is, I'm not saying is it simple or not, difficult or not. I'm not talking about the rich that fly around the world, don't feel anything, thinking about where can they spend their money instead of saving it. I'm not talking about that. But I am sure that eventually we have to feel that we're a part of one family. Why is this the main thing? Because the calculation that nature is making with us, this is the calculation that it's making, actually. Nature is treating us as one family. So, how do you actually, when I calculate things in a family, you're an economist on the ones, on the one hand you're an economist, on the other hand you're a landlord. So, make a calculation. You need to give this child so much and another child so much, and then you make a balance. So you have to make a balance over the entire country, the entire society, and how do you participate in it correctly? We want, it's not that it already exists, but we will have to reach this kind of calculation, and this calculation will be certain and really revealed to everyone. When you're saying that we'll have to reach a kind of calculation where we're all one family, you're not only talking about merciful people, good heart, with a good heart and so on. You're saying that all people will have to reach that? We will all have to think about each other as if these are my relatives, even though that I don't have a warm heart. Of course, then you'll have to warm your heart up. Previously, you mentioned the principle. You said that I'm not waiting for everyone. I'm not waiting to see whether everyone's treating each other favorably, but there's a warlike situation, and I adjust myself to it. Why not wait for everyone, integrally wise, from your broad view of things? You're saying, you start, don't wait for others. It's not war like you go to war, and if you go in first, you endanger yourself more. Here, it's the other way around. The earlier I go in, the more I'm willing to sacrifice myself. By this I earn, I gain more. I feel, I understand, I open things correctly. Explain this some more. Why needn't I look at others, but I should start with myself? I have to start with myself because I want to understand what's going on in the system. Not that it seems to me through my egoistic narrow eye, but what is nature cooking here? Where does it want to take us? Why is it confusing us so much? And here, I want to discover what Kabbalists are saying, that all in all, we're not deteriorating. By all these blows, we have to rise to our connection and attain nature in general as an integral system, and through that system to see our eternal existence from generation to generation. Okay, now I want to talk about the family that's renting the home. Up until now, we talked about the landlords. On the other side, you have the tenants. They have a financial difficulty, they're on furlough, and so on. What is their responsibility? What, they became beggars? How should they relate to themselves? Actually, it depends on what country, what society do they live in. Once their income and their property decreases below a certain basic level, then society too has to care for them to bring them to a degree where they will be able to exist. Do they have to have a demand toward the country? Or no, there's no demand here. Here we're not talking about a demand. The demand is, in the meantime, they're demanding, and people are demanding and going on protests. All these things only cause us to deteriorate ever more and to lose all of our means. But we have to reach a state where we find such families that really live below the level of minimum basic income, however it's determined, but in a way that a person can be able to make ends meet, and so that he and his family won't feel that they're outside the boundaries of society. So the government is also responsible. Of course, unfortunately, our time's almost up. Could you summarize what is the most important principle from the integral point of view in order to deal with this situation? Landlord, tenant, they're out of money, what do they do? I'm not only looking at the landlord, tenant, and that they're out of money. I'm looking at the general direction of things, that nature, the upper force, nature is above us, is putting us into a situation where we will have to think about how, in our current state, do we organize society in such a way that it will be integral, that we will not deteriorate to a state where among us there are people that are really looking for something to eat, and the kids go hungry to school if they go to school at all. Meaning, we have to care for everyone. We have to organize an integral society, and that all of us are responsible. If we don't understand that nature is demanding this from us, then we will become a third world country. And it doesn't matter that we're smarter than Jews and that Israel is prosperous. This prosperity will immediately, in a few months, turn into something where we won't be able to deal even with the simplest elementary things in life. It's really worrying. Everyone has to understand this. Everyone has to understand, and I'm not sure that the nation is ready for this and that the government is ready for it, and in general that there is some kind of concern for people that this might happen to us, because we're all dependent on trade, on different international projects. We're not a country that here that we can exist in and of ourselves. We're not a country that if due to some blow we go back to cultivating land, farming, to these different kinds of forms like we had before from 100 years ago or something that will be able to exist. We won't. We ourselves, we don't have anything. We don't have fuel, we don't have food, we don't have nothing. Therefore, as much as possible, if we will organize ourselves integrally as nature is demanding of us, we will flow with the entire process of nature mutually in a good and nice way. Dr. Lightman, thank you very, very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Dependency on all of humanity. Question. There is a law in nature, the general and the particular are equal. It also manifests itself on the corporeal level between people. How can I verify that the advancement of other people depends on my connection to the whole world? Answer. This is determined by how much you annul yourself before the higher governing power. This awareness is an indicator of progress, because by annulling yourself, you come to the fact that you are in control of the world. Question. Can the feeling of confidence in achieving the goal, which comes from the environment, also be considered an indicator? Answer. The goal does not come from the environment, it passes to you through the environment. And therefore, if you associate with it, you come closer to the goal. Question. My ability to check to what extent in each action I can abstract from my personal gain and act for the sake of this mini-society, mini-model of humanity, can this also be an indicator of progress? Answer, yes. Exactly to the extent to which you connect yourself not with yourself but with the environment, with humanity, on with higher systems. From CapTV's Management Skills, February 7th, 2020. Live and learn. Question. There is a trend today in the world, whether one is in first grade, completing a doctorate, or taking an advanced training course, you need to constantly study. What happens to our world? Why does a person have to study something all the time until he retires? This was not the case before. Answer. Technology and electronics are constantly changing in the world, programs are changing, and thinking is changing. We are very closely connected with consumers. If in earlier times, products were developed and manufactured within 10 to 20 years, today it happens very quickly. Modern equipment and technology are based on software management. Question. What is the essence of this phenomenon? Why do these changes occur? Answer. Because we have moved from developing products in matter, for example, in casting, smelting, forging, to computer development. And this is very dynamic. Therefore, we all need to know program management, program development, etc. Question. Is it somehow connected with internal changes in man? Answer. Of course. As we change, the world around us also changes. We see it differently and adapt it to ourselves. From CapTV's Management Skills, July 24, 2020. Unconscious craving for the land of Israel. question. Balhasulam writes in the article a speech for the completion of the Zohar. The proof is that anyone who is drawn to the secrets of the Torah is also drawn to the land of Israel. It is interesting that many non-Jews by nationality are drawn here. Where does such a strange desire come from? Answer: they subconsciously feel that this is a special land, a special place with a special atmosphere. In principle, this has always been the case for years. Religions and all kinds of beliefs are connected to the fact that it is a holy land. In addition, even complete non-believers feel some kind of attraction to this place on the geographical map inside themselves, and they rush here. I know many people from Russia who, instead of going on vacation, say to the Maldives, want to visit Israel, Jerusalem, these ancient places. They feel that there is some kind of mystery here, some source of special energy for all mankind. From CabTV's systematic analysis of the development of the people of Israel, November 25, 2019,